This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
This Ramban at the beginning of the Sedra is one of those that one has to learn and know. It's one of the real classical pieces of Ramban. Yes, Hashem, we'll learn through part of it this evening. The Sedra starts with the most amazing instruction. Kedoshim tiyu, you shall be holy. You shall have Kedusha. And we know what Kedusha means. When we speak of Kedusha in the Torah, we speak of godliness, of God's kind of Kedusha, not of of little material things. And that the Torah should instruct every Jew to be holy, to reach Kedusha, to achieve sanctity, is a most amazing concept. It says a great deal about what we're capable of. It says a great deal about who we are. And it says a great deal about what is expected of us. So much so that the Ramban says, "V'tam ha'kosuv she'omar ki kodosh ani Hashem elokeichem," and that the reason that the Torah adds, "For I, Hashem your God, am holy," loyma, that is to teach us, "She'anachnu nizke ledovko boy bihiyoseinu kedoshim," that we can merit to cleave to the Ribbono Shel Olam through our being Kodesh. Now this cleaving to the Ribbono Shel Olam is an even more outstanding concept. That really is the purpose of all religion, is an attempt to be able to relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam, or more so, to be able to relate intimately with the Ribbono Shel Olam, to achieve some intimacy with him. We go as far as saying Ledov Koboy, that there is a concept of Dveikus, there is a concept of actually cleaving to the Ribbono Shel Olam, of attaching oneself to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That is within the realms of human possibility. The human being, despite his finiteness, and despite the fact that he is material, whereas God is eternal and ethereal, nevertheless, that he can do, he can be Dovek Bahashem. The human being has the ability of cleaving to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a difficult concept to understand altogether. Cleaving to the Ribbono Shel Olam. If somebody gets an invitation to attend a dinner at the White House or at Buckingham Palace, he regards it as a big honor. He's very thrilled by such a thing. And off he goes. What's he thrilled by? So for an hour or two he's in the company of the president or of the queen. And what's that company? She sits up at the main table and he sits half a kilometer down the hall. But that's it. It's already yichus. We're talking the Dov Kobay. We're not talking about the Queen of England or the President of the United States. We're talking about the Ribbono Shel Olam. And nor are we talking about once in a blue moon having dinner in the same room with him. We're talking about Ladov Kobay. That means not to move from his side. Imagine such an opportunity. Imagine the human being had the opportunity, or an individual had the opportunity, of achieving permanent intimacy with the greatest person imaginable. Imagine a physics professor at Witz who's invited to stick with Einstein, to be with him wherever he goes, to sit with him, to learn with him, to study with him. Imagine a yeshiva bocher who's invited to sit and learn with a Vilna Gaon all day and all night. Imagine a musician is invited to sit with Bach or with Beethoven all day and all night. Look what we're talking about. Ledov Kobay. That a Jew has the possibility of achieving Dveikus, of achieving intimate attachment to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's within the realms of our possibility. And then there are all sorts of religious techniques used, both within Yiddishkeit and in other religions, Lahavdil, to try and achieve this Dveikus, to try and achieve attachment to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And it's here, for example, that many of the groups of Hasidim and ourselves differ. as far as we're concerned, Dreykus is, of course, it's possible. Not only is it possible, but it's possible for every Jew. But the root is clearly laid down and there are no shortcuts. And the Ramban puts it quite clearly. The Ramban was no Chosid and he was no Misnagid. He was a Rishon. And he lays down, Sha'anachnu nizkeh ledov kaboy b'hiyaseinu kedoshim. We can merit to achieve dveikus with the Ribbono Shel Olam through our being kedoshim, through our being holy. There is no other way. You can sing all night and you can learn Musar all day, you can do what you want. At the end of the day, the only way dveikus can be achieved is through kedusha. That's it. It's an axiom. That's the rule, that's the law. There's no discussion, there's no debate on the matter. Nobody disagrees with it. Anything else are illusions of dveikus. The person thinks that he can sit and sing, and through his singing he'll reach dveikus even if he's not a kodosh, because he once saw his Rebbe do that. The Rebbe did it, of course, because the Rebbe is a kodosh. He has kedusha. So when he sings in kedusha. But an ordinary person who doesn't have kedusha, so he tries the same technique. He says, look, my Rebbe was singing all night last night, and if I sing, I'll also reach dveikus. That's like a who knows what they tell the story. The story that I saw with my own eyes. An African Nebuch was watching in the early days of these automatic banks. He watched a white fellow walk up to the wall, put a card in, press buttons, and out came money. And I saw this man's eyes getting bigger and bigger and bigger. He couldn't believe this. So he stood there a little longer. Would you believe it? Another white man comes up. Also starts pressing buttons. I don't know if you noticed that they put in a card. Also presses buttons and pops the money, comes, puts in his pocket, walks off. A third one came up. Now a smile broke out on this black man's face already. Now he hopped already. So he went up and he started banging the buttons. No money came out. Nothing came out. And I have no doubt that he thought it was part of the apartheid system, and that whites can do it and blacks can't, and if it was his own country he would be able to. I have no doubt that that's what went through his mind. Didn't enter his mind anything else. So sometimes you see a Hasidic Shayid sees his Rebbe reach dveikus by pressing the buttons, so he also tries pressing the button. What he doesn't realize is the Rebbe has credit over there. So when he presses the button, there's something to come out. He also starts pressing the buttons. What does he expect to come out? Nothing comes out. That's not. There's only one route to reach dveikus. To reach a level of being able to cleave to the Ribbono Shel Olam, says the Ramban, that's through Kedusha. That's it. What is Kedusha? And how does one achieve it? I spoke to you last week about the fact that religious society today is no longer an elite. Used to be so. Used to be you had Yidden, and you had the Frumer Yidden. And the Frumer Yid was honest, and the Frumer Yid was noble, and the Frumer Yid was refined, and the Frumer Yid was a mensch. Among the non-religious, there were some who were mensch, and there were some who weren't. You couldn't tell. But among the religious Jews, you knew. People talk about the standard of ethics of the diamond trade. It doesn't exist anymore, by the way. This business that a man's word is his bond and all that kind of thing, you don't need written contracts, that used to be the case. And the reason it used to be the case is because the diamond trade used to be run by from people. Today it's no longer the case. Today you need contracts, and you need to have a lawyer look over your contract, and even after you've had a lawyer look over your contract, you stand a good chance of losing all your money. What's changed? The diamond trade is still run by Frumer Yidden. Today doesn't mean anything anymore. It doesn't mean anything. In the old days, a Frumer Yid would never have risked a Chilul Hashem. Chas v'sholem. Rather lose the diamond. Rather lose a fortune. Rather than a Chilul Hashem. That doesn't apply anymore. One has no assumption. Yes, there are very fine people, and they're tzaddikim, and they're a bunch of Rishoyim. And to the outside person, they all look the same. Nothing externally has changed in the diamond trade. But the ethics has changed. Because the ethics of Frum society has changed. In fact, it has become, from becoming the elite of the Jewish people, it has become a society. And in a society, you have your rogues and you have your saints. So in the Frum society, you have your rogues and you have your saints. And I'm telling you all this says you shouldn't become depressed and dejected when you encounter it. Something that you will encounter and you will see, you will understand that that doesn't mean anything. That's how it is. But that doesn't mean that the elite has ceased to exist. That simply means that the elite is more difficult to recognize, but not that it has ceased to exist. There is still an elite. And that is the subject of this Ramban. It brings Rashi, who says that Rashi says that Kedusha means Prishus. Prishus is a word which we're going to spend the whole shiur translating tonight, what Prishus means. The way Rashi learns it, Prishus means withdrawal. And the specific withdrawal to which Rashi refers is Prishus min Averis. Specifically from Arias, but from all types of Averis, an active withdrawal from forbidden actions. That's Kedusha. The Ramban disagrees with that and says, Ulefi daiti, and in my opinion, Ein ha-prishus hazu lifresh min ha-arayus kedivrei harav. This prishus, I agree, as the Teraskranim says, that Kedusha means prishus, it means withdrawal, but it's not withdrawal from Averis. Because how can it say, Ki kadosh ani Hashem elokeichem? How can you say, you must be holy just as I am holy, just as I don't do Averis, so you mustn't do it? What's it, shaykh to the Ribbono Shel Olam? So the Ramban, that's not what it means at all. Aval ha-prishus hu ha-muzkeres b'chol mokum b'talmud, she-ba'aleo nikroim prushim. Prishus is a mido. Prishus is a characteristic, says the Ramban. That characteristic which is possessed by those people termed many times by the Gemara as Purushim. You see, the Gemara talks about Purushim, types of people. There are different classes of Jews, believe it or not. We're a very class-conscious society. We'll discuss some of those classes this evening. It says the Ramban, one of those classes are Purushim. And Prishus is the characteristic possessed by Prushim. What do you say? What is that? Va'inyan. The concept is Ki hatoiro hizhiro ba'arayus v'macholi masuri. The Torah warns one against sexually improper behavior, against eating treif food, v'hitiro abiyo ish b'ishtoi, and the Torah allows intimate contact between husband and wife, v'achilas habosor, v'hayayin, the Torah allows the eating of meat and the drinking of wine, as we discussed last week. Imkein, if so, yimtzo bal ha-taiva, a bal taiva is, it's also a difficult word to translate, a man driven by desire. Baltaiva, a man, you know, the man who has desires. We all have desires. A baltaiva is a man driven by desires. We talked last week about the wild beast in a man. A man who's driven by his wild beast. Such a man will find mokim liyos shotuch bezimas ishtoi or noshov harabos. He will find it possible to be saturated with sexual indulgence with his wife or wives. And to find himself perpetually saturated with wine and eating meat, and he can use bad language constantly. Nowhere does it say you shall not use bad language. And he will end up becoming a noval. Novel is a despicable person, Birushus HaTorah, with the Hechshir of the Torah. So it will come. He'll have the permission of the Torah, he'll be doing nothing wrong, he keeps Shabbos, he only eats kosher. The fact that he stuffs his face, that he eats in a coarse way, that it's sickening to be at the same table as he, where does it say in the Torah that you mustn't do that? The fact that he's often drunk, where does it say in the Torah thou shalt not be drunk? The fact that he's coarse, that his arrogance, where does it say that one can't be these things? Lefichach bo'akosu, therefore the Torah comes acharei shepire ta'isurim she'osaroisum legamri, after specifying, and the Torah instructs in a general sense Shiniye Purushim Min Hamutaros, that we should be separated from excess. That's the meaning of Kedushim. So says the Ramban, I agree that Prishus means a withdrawal, but not a withdrawal from Aveira. That, of course, you have to be withdrawn from it. That's not Kedusha. You're not a Kedush just because you don't do Aveiras. Kedusha is a withdrawal from permitted excesses. That's Kedusha. Yimo'et b'miskal, he should cut down his sexual practice. Yikadish atzmi min hayayin b'miyutoy, and he should sanctify himself by cutting down his alcohol. Even though today we don't have to worry about tumor, he should make an effort to keep away from it. And he should protect his mouth and his tongue from becoming defiled with too much eating, too much coarse eating and despicable conversation. The Kadesh Atzmi Bezen, he should sanctify himself in these areas, Ad Shiagia Liprishus, until he gets to the level of Prishus. Now, that's the act of Prishus, that's not yet the Midah of Prishus. Ramban is distinguishing, if you read the Ramban carefully, you will see the Ramban is distinguishing between actions of Prishus and characteristics of Prishus. One can do things, one can do an act of Prishus, but that doesn't mean one is a Porush. There's a big difficulty. One can give tzedakah, that doesn't mean one's a baal tzedakah. One can do chesed, that doesn't mean one's a baal chesed. At this, up to this point, the Ramban has simply defined acts of precious. Withdrawal from permitted excesses, that's an act of precious. And you carry on doing that ad shiagia leprecious until you reach precious, until you become a porush. As they said on Rabbi Chia, sheloi sach sicho betelo miyomov. But in his entire life, he never said a word that was unnecessary. In this and other such examples, comes this mitzvah of Kedushim to you. After it is specified all the Averas which are absolutely forbidden, to the point where included in this instruction of Kedushim to you is cleanliness, hands, one's body. Yazhir shiniye nekiyim utahirim uferushim mehamein b'nei odom shehein melachlechim atzman b'meitoris uvekiyurim. Here you've got the essence of it. What is the essence of the instruction? That we should be clean and pure and purushim, separated. And now he changes the connotation. In the action, Purushim means acts of withdrawal. But in the Midah, in the characteristic, Purushim means an act of an existence of separateness. From whom must one be separate? Nehamon b'nei Odom, from the masses. Here we have the introduction of the concept of a Jewish elite. There is such a thing. There are the masses and there is the elite. The masses, by the way, is not talking about non-religious people. Well, we're talking about religious people. They're talking about a Porush and a Kodosh being somebody who separates himself from the masses of religion of Bnei Odom. Who are the masses? Not people who do Averis. Those are people who defile themselves with permitted excesses and other ugly actions. Things which are permitted. But it's not Kedusha. There we have the demarcation. He gives two other examples where the Torah follows this line of giving general isurim, detailed isurim, and then giving a covering instruction. The one he says is after giving all the laws of the Choshen Mishpat, all the laws that one must and must not do in business practice, hundreds of details. At the end of it, the Torah says, "Va'asisu ha'yosha va'atoiv." You must do that which is straight and that which is correct and that which is good. There's a general positive principle. It's not enough not to steal and not to be dishonest. In addition, there has to be a positive goodness and straightness in the way one acts. The same with Shabbos. After detailing all the Isurim of Shabbos, all the things that one mustn't do, still it says Es Shabsoisai Tishmori, you must keep Shabbos. You can go through all the Isurim, one can do nothing wrong, one doesn't cook on Shabbos, one doesn't drive on Shabbos, one doesn't write on Shabbos, one can go through everything and still it's not a Shabbos. You've done nothing wrong, but it's not a Shabbos. There's a positive injunction, you must make a Shabbos, you must keep a Shabbos in addition to not doing wrong. So in the Torah in general, after all the Yisurim, the things that you may and may not do, there is still a general, that's not enough. You can land up keeping the whole Shulchan Aruch, you don't do a single Avera, and yet you're Kedushim to you, you're not. You can become a Noval Birushus HaTorah, you can be a frum, despicable person. It's possible. This mitzvah makes that impossible. This mitzvah is thou shalt not be despicable. Even if it doesn't mention anywhere in the anywhere else in the Torah, thou shalt not be despicable. That's this mitzvah. What we need to discuss is this concept of Kedusha. Bearing in mind, for example, we say that on Motzei Shabbos when we daven, and so on, and we praise the Ribbono Shel Olam who's mavdil ben kodesh v'chol. There's a distinction between kodesh and chol. Kodesh, that which is holy; chol, that which is secular. Ben yom hashvi'i l'sheshes yomei ha'maaseh, between Shabbos and the 6 days of work. Ben Yisrael lo'amim, between the Jew and the non-Jew. Those are distinctions which are made. There are certain actions, as we see in the Ramban, which are prohibited. Asurim. Can't eat treif food. There are certain actions which are mitzvahs. You've got to eat a korban Pesach on Pesach night. You've got to eat something of a korban Pesach. You've got to eat matzah on Pesach night. So here we have in the act of eating a prohibition. Treif, you're not allowed to eat. Korban Pesach or matzah, you must eat. What about supper on the Tuesday night? You may eat. It's mutter. We have to understand that although there are many things which are mutter, kedusha they're not. We have to distinguish between that which is permissible and that which is holy. But we need to go a step further. Let's say I'm hungry on supper on Tuesday night. I haven't eaten the whole day, and what I'm going to eat is 100% kosher, and I'm going to say a bracha with proper kavona, and I'm going to say divrei Torah at the table, and I'm going to bench afterwards. May I eat or must I eat? It's a mitzvah to eat. I've got to look after my body. I've got to eat. So the eating now becomes a mitzvah, but it's still not kedusha. That's still called chol. It's a mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah in the area of secular activity. Because we need to understand that not every mitzvah comes into the geder, comes into the area of kedusha. It's an incredible concept. There can be mitzvahs which are not in the area of kedusha. The Ramban goes further. You can do all the mitzvahs in the Torah and still be a noval. You can still be despicable. Doing mitzvahs doesn't mean you're involved in kedusha. A mitzvah itself isn't necessarily an involvement in kedusha. Kedusha is a very specific midah, it's a characteristic which needs to be worked on and achieved. And it's by no means automatic. And there is a distinction, there is a line of demarcation between kedush and chol. Just as there is a line of demarcation between those people that the Gemara calls Prushim, the Kedushim, the Jewish elite, and the Hamoina, and the regular people. We need to understand that. What does this mean, that an action can in fact be a mitzvah and it lacks kedusha? It's a mitzvah and it lacks kedusha. Reb Simcha Zussel explains this, and it's a difficult concept, but I think you'll understand it. We've spoken a lot in the last few weeks about bodies and souls, and that in everything in fact there's a body and a soul. There's a material, external part of the object, and there's an internal part of the object. We've talked more, we've discussed the levush, we've discussed the outside clothing of the object. So the outside there's clothing, and under the clothing there's a body, and under the body there's a soul. And if you take off the clothing, then the skin, what was the body, now becomes the clothing, and what was the soul now becomes the body, and there's a soul under that, and so it goes, like the skins of an onion. Whatever is the most external is the clothing. Under that is a body, under that is a soul. Mitzvahs also have bodies and souls to them. Every action has a body and a soul to it. Let us examine: a person eats a trefa piece of meat. Can his soul, can the person's soul, acquire any nourishment from that action? No. There's no redeeming factor in it. No matter what he does, there's no redeeming, nothing, there's no holiness in this whatever, nothing. What happens if a person eats a kosher meal? Well, now yes. Now he says a bracha, and he's eating in order to give himself the koyach, to give himself the energy to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam afterwards, and his benches afterwards, and they did their Torah at the table, and he's got some guests at the table as well. This now becomes a spiritual experience, it becomes a mitzvah. Is his soul being nourished by this event? Absolutely. The bracha he says, the things he has in mind, the conversation, the divrei Torah, the benching, all that nourishes the soul, without a question. What does the food do? The food nourishes the body. So two things are happening simultaneously. The body of the food is nourishing the body, and the soul of the food is nourishing the soul simultaneously. Let's look at less subtle examples. There's a Gemara at the end of Menachos. Tanya Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya. Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya was the Nossi in his time. He was the head of the yeshivas of the Jewish people at that time. Bitchilo, to start off with. Kol ha'imer ole, lo. Anybody who would have said to me, go up to the job, take the job. When we were talking about it, anybody who recommended that I should become Nossi, ani koifsoi v'noisna lifnei ha'ari, I would take such a person, tie him up, and throw him at a lion. That's what I would do. Feed him to the lions. That's what he wants to do to me. I'm living a very good private life, thank you very much. I don't need this kind of thing on my head. It's all very well, you're dealing with heads and chiefs. A lion's also a head and a chief. Let's see how you enjoy dealing with him. Atal, but now that I've been Nossi, kol ha'omer li leired mimeno, if anybody would tell me, resign, ani matil olav kumkum shulchami, I'll pour a pot of boiling water over him. We're not going to go into now why these two examples exactly. Sha'arei shol borach mimeno, after all, shol fled from this honor. When they looked for him, when they wanted to make him king, they couldn't find him. They didn't know where he was. Eventually they found him. He was in the cloakroom hanging up people's coats. He didn't want to know, have anything to do with it. And he argued, he tried to get out of it. Uchashe'ala. And once he became king, Bikesh laharoig es David. He was ready to kill David because David was threatening his throne. And we see this over and over again, says Reb Simcha Zisl. We see it with Moshe Rabbeinu. Didn't want to take the job. Can you imagine what greater way was there to end the lifetime? Moshe was 80 already. That your last job should be taking Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim and leading them into Eretz Israel. And it wasn't anticipated it was going to be a long job. It was going to be a week or two. That's all. No. Shlach no biyad tishlach. Find somebody else to do. I don't want the job. What is there in this reluctance to take up positions of leadership, although once they have the positions of leadership, they stick to it? Says Reb Simcha Zisl, a position of leadership also has its body and it has its soul. The soul of the position is the most unbelievable chesed. What are you really doing? You're taking Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim, out of a miserable existence of bondage and suffering. You're taking them via Har Sinai to receive the Torah, and from there on to Eretz Israel. You're establishing them as a nation. You're leading them into Eretz Israel. What greater chus could there be than that? But what's the body of the action? The body of the action, you've got to be makpid on your kovod. You need a certain amount of honor. You can't lead people if you're not respected. You're going to have to be harsh. You're going to have to issue sentences. You're going to have to judge people. There's got to be a harshness to it as well. That's the body of the action. It says Reb Simcha Zisl, all these people were worried that their characters would be influenced by the body of the action rather than the soul. In other words, one is nourished not only by the things one eats, one is nourished by everything one does. If you give a wild animal its will, you're nourishing him, you're making him stronger. If you break a wild animal's will, you're weakening him. If a person has a particular yetzer and he gives into it, he's nourishing his wild animal. If he doesn't give into it, he's weakening. If a person does a mitzvah, he's nourishing his neshama. If a Moshe Rabbeinu gets involved in taking the Jews out of Israel, says Reb Simcha Zissel, he's worried. It's all very well saying, look what my neshama will benefit. I'm doing the most wonderful acts of chesed. But who knows whether my wild animal isn't going to be nourished just as much by the physical part of the action, which is heavy, there's plenty of it. I mentioned to you once before that Reb Simcha Zissel made a comment about doctors, about surgeons. He found that, I don't know, I've never done a survey, but he found in his time that surgeons had a streak of cruelty to them. And he says it shouldn't be that way. The people are busy day and night with chesed, saving people's lives, ridding them of disease, helping them. There should be nobody more refined and more noble than a surgeon. Who else has got such a schus to have his whole day occupied in such great mitzvahs and such great chesed? He says, and if you look at them, they're callous. I think they're right. I've never been in an operating surgery, but they tell me that the kind of discussion that goes on there, the kind of conversation around the open body, is not exactly the conversation of tzaddikim who are very preoccupied with the mitzvahs they're busy doing. It's not that you don't feel you're in a Beis HaMidrash. You don't feel you're in a holy sanctuary where a great mitzvah is being performed. You don't feel that. That's what they tell me, sir. Because this is obviously right. Why, he says, the person's occupied, surely it rubs off on him, surely it affects him. The soul of the action is great chesed, but the body of the action is cutting people open, chopping limbs off, sawing through bones, opening skulls. That's what the body is. Who says what's going to influence you more? Are you going to be influenced more by the gross exterior manifestation of the action, or are you going to be influenced by the subtle deep meanings and philosophies of what you're really doing, things that you can't see? The surgeon hardly even sees the patient afterwards. He doesn't know who he is, he doesn't know where he comes from, doesn't know where he's going to, knows little about his history. He gets the fellow there on the table, cuts him open, fixes him up, and sends him out. So where's the spiritual side? It's deep. The spiritual side needs to be uncovered, it needs to be opened up. And the ordinary person isn't exposed to that, he's exposed to the surface, and the surface is cruel and vicious. Isn't it possible, says Reb Simcha Zissel, that a surgeon is influenced by the viciousness of his actions more than by the subtle kedusha of his actions? And therefore, isn't it possible that these people are more worried about the viciousness of leadership, which is a necessary part of leadership, and the effect that will have on them, rather than the subtle areas of kedusha and of sanctity? The reason that that happens is twofold. Primarily, it's along the same lines as we discussed in the seventh night's Pesach. Paro was punished for not understanding the miracles. That's what he was punished for. He wasn't punished for drowning the babies. He wasn't punished for saving the Jews. Ultimately, he could have got away without the punishment for all that, because if he wouldn't have chased after the Jews when they were about to leave, if he wouldn't have chased after them, he wouldn't have been wiped out. He was only wiped out because he chased after them. Why did he chase after them, says the Medrash, you remember? Because he didn't understand the miracles. He didn't extend, he didn't project the principle of those miracles to day-to-day nature. And that's why he slipped up. We're influenced by what we see, we're influenced by the clothing. That's what influences us. We don't think beyond that, we don't analyze beyond that, we don't get to the subtleties. And just as when we see the splitting of the Red Sea, all we see is that, the drama is what we see, the tremendous dramatic impact. But when that's over, and we're walking on dry land, and we see a bird building a nest, that doesn't strike us as miraculous. Because we don't think. We're only impressed by major dramatic events. We're not impressed by things that need thought, by things that need analysis. Opinion is created by dramatic pictures and by television shows, not by serious analyses of events in a geschmacka, well-written journalistic article. That doesn't influence people. What influences people is the images on television. That's what they see. What you see is only the clothing. It's not even the body. You can't see the goof. You only see the clothing. And sometimes it's fancy dress. But we don't see beyond the fancy dress. The way it's dressed up, that's how it's portrayed. That's what we see, and that's what affects us. And when you see a surgeon cutting up a body, what are you looking at? You're looking at the clothing. he's not cutting. You say, my goodness, look at that cruel man. Look at him, cutting, killing. So take it easy, he's not, he's fixing, he's repairing. But for that you need to know a little bit of surgery, you need to know a little bit of medicine to understand that the man is in fact improving that his patient, he's not causing his patient more harm. People aren't affected by what they think about, because they don't think. What they're affected is by what they see. And the surgeon continuously sees himself in the act of cutting open bodies. That's what affects him. Moshe Rabbeinu is worried that he will continually see himself as the person being honored, demanding honor, instructing, judging, sentencing, and that's what's going to affect him, not the subtleties of what he's doing in essence. One takes that one level deeper. You'll remember when my father was here, he spoke several times about the concept of, in order to appreciate and respond to spiritual things, you need a sophisticated soul. A body can't respond to a spiritual thing. A body can't respond to an intellectual concept. To respond to an intellectual concept, you need a brain. To respond to a spiritual concept, you need a soul. And the more developed your soul is, the more sophisticated a spiritual concept you can develop, you can relate to. But a person whose soul is undeveloped is incapable of relating to spiritual concepts. He can only relate to it physically. Which again is the same concept when you have a surgeon whose neshama is not well developed. How can he relate to the neshama of his work? He can't. He's a body, he's a wild animal, and he's a wild animal. He can relate to that part of his work which a wild animal could perceive. And just if a dog saw him cutting open bodies, the dog would think he's killing. So does a wild animal of a human being who sees one cutting open bodies. Deep down, all he's able to relate to is the external action, not to what's happening deep down, not to the thought process that's going on, and not to the ultimate of the achievement. And therefore we have a situation now where there can be many things which are permitted, but they nourish the body. Now there's nothing wrong with nourishing the body. We need bodies. That's why it's not prohibited. Therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam did not say thou shalt not eat meat. So it happens the body needs meat. That's how the Ribbono Shel Olam designed the body. The Ribbono Shel Olam did not say thou shalt not drink wine. The human being needs wine. That's how the Ribbono Shel Olam designed us. But in every act of eating meat or drinking wine, it's not only our spirits that are being nourished. Our bodies are being nourished simultaneously. And the more dominant the wild animal is in the human being, the more nourishment, or the more of a share of nourishment he gets out of the action. So you're feeding two at the same time, and it's a very difficult situation. There are two powers inside you, both need nourishment, but you would like to give the wild animal just a little bit, just to keep him going. You want him to get a little thinner, you want him to lose some weight, you want him to get a little bit more tired. The neshama you want to build up. How do you do it? When whatever you do that has a physical aspect to it, part of it goes to nourishing the body, part of it goes to nourishing not just the body, but the wild animal in the body. That's what it goes to nourishing as well. And therefore we have a concept of precious min ha-metoris, of withdrawing, of limiting excess, cutting it down. And that's where one comes onto levels of kedusha. One sits down at a meal and one says, it's kosher, it's mahadrin, it's good nice people I'm eating with. Right, let's tuck in. Second helping please, third helping please, fourth helping please. Let's enjoy ourselves. And one eats with our noise and with our mess, and one makes an absolute animal of oneself. What's wrong? What's wrong is that what's being nourished is not the soul. What do you mean it's mahadrin? How can it be not the soul? What do you think? Doesn't matter that it's mahadrin. So your wild animal is getting mahadrin food, that's all. It's a bit of a waste, he doesn't need mahadrin food. But that's what you're giving him. That's not the soul which is being nourished. When one comes onto kedusha, one comes onto actions which nourish only the neshama. A person sits down and learns Torah. And he learns Torah with no ulterior motives. Plain and simply because he wants to know the Torah's Hashem, he wants to know, to enjoy, to become close to it. That's only spiritual. That's kedusha. A person, the deal is that a father has to teach his child a trade. He must be able to earn a living. It's a halacha. And so much so is that a halacha that he's even allowed to do it on Shabbos. Strictly speaking, according to the deen, there's plenty enough time during the week for you not to have to rely on this deen. But the din is that if the father's worried that the son is going to plug his exams, on Shabbos he devises the work with him. Is that Shabbos day? Yes, it's a mitzvah. He's doing a mitzvah. I have a chiyuv to teach you a trade. And therefore, I'm allowed to take the Torah on Shabbos, and I'm allowed to arrange marriages on Shabbos, so I'm entitled and obligated to make sure that you pass your exam, even if it's on Shabbos. Of course, we're not talking about doing any surim, we're talking only about speaking, asking questions, making him read over his books. I stress again that we have enough time during the week not to have to use Shabbos, which we have precious little time to devote to learning and things like that. But strictly speaking, according to the din, that is allowed. Good, it's allowed. And it's a mitzvah. But is there any comparison between the mitzvah of swatting up one's economics and of learning a blat gemara? Can one compare the two mitzvahs? What's the difference? The difference is in level of kedusha. One learns the blat gemara, there is nothing but kedusha. Only the soul is being nourished. There's nothing else there. When one's doing other things, might be mitzvahs, but there's an awful lot else being nourished at the same time. There's an awful lot else gaining strength at the same time. The interesting point is, how much goes to the neshama and how much goes to the wild animal, to the beast? Let's say I sit down to a 6-course meal, a big 6-course meal, not a small one, a big one. Say my brocha before, I wash, say my brocha, check that everything's kosher, and I sit down. A meal takes an hour. And during that hour, 2 hours, and during the 2 hours, 10 minutes is spent in Divrei Torah, and at the end of it, there's benching, and we go. Not a word of Lashon Hara is spoken, not a word of nonsense is spoken, not a word of Tzchok and Kalus Rosh, it's all very nice, very fine. So what did my neshama get out of that meal? It got a bracha, it got washing, it got a bracha on the Tilas Yadayim, it got a Motzi Lechem in Haaretz, got a benching, and we got 10 minutes of Torah. And it didn't suffer any humiliation, because for the rest of the time there were no Yisurim. So in those 2 hours, that's what the Neshama got. What would be if instead of that 6-course meal, I had a piece of bread and butter and a glass of water? What would the Neshama get out of that meal? Exactly the same. The Neshama is totally unaffected by the quantity of material involvement. True, the meal is a mitzvah, but it didn't have to be 6 courses. And kedusha is when the two are brought into proportion. And a person says to himself, my goodness, all I'm interested in here is having enough carbohydrates and proteins and fats and whatever else I need, and vitamins, that's all I'm interested in, spending a few pleasant minutes and being able to say a few brachas and to bench and to thank the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's really what it's all about. So do you mind if we cut out the 6 courses and all I'll have is a piece of bread and a glass of water, a cup of tea at the end of it? That's fine, thank you, then I'll get back to my Gemara. By the way, this is one of these shiurim that one has to be a bit careful of. The intention is not to depress people at what levels are needed to be achieved. And I've said to you very often, I know there are people that do get depressed. That's only a sign of their own sincerity and their own spiritual ambitions. But it's not meant to one shouldn't and cannot afford to get depressed by such things. But it is important to know A, where we're leading to, and B, that there are such people. That when we talk of Gedolei Yisrael, when we talk of Tzadikim, this is what we're talking about. These are the levels we're referring to. We need to know what we're talking about when we talk about these Gedolei Yisrael, who they are and where they're holding. And when we talk about a religious elite, we've got to know what we're talking about. It's not some word. This is really an elite. That's the concept of precious, of minimizing and limiting the physical involvement so that my body gets what it needs and not a thing more than that, and my soul gets as much as it can get from it, but there's no need to put more into it than that. That's the level of precious. This being Purush, as the Ramban puts it, Shaniyeh Nekiyim U'Tahirim U'Furushim, that we should be clean and pure and separated Mehamoin b'nei Adam, from the masses of people, doesn't mean a physical separation. And perhaps we can now redefine the word precious in terms of the Ramban. Instead of separate, according to Rashi, you remember we said it was an act of withdrawal. According to the Ramban, we started using the word separateness. Perhaps a more accurate word would be distinctiveness. The person has to be distinguished from the masses. Not that you have nothing to do with them. On the contrary, one has to socialize, one has to do business with people, one has to involve oneself with people. But that in one's very mixing with people, there is a distinctiveness. You can point out and say, he's a member of the elite, that's not an ordinary person. Look at him. Look at the way he speaks. Look at the way he eats. Look at the way he does business. Look at the way he walks. That's a special. And among the laws are that Talmid Chacham should not be a gargaron, he should not be a glutton. He should eat what is necessary for his body. He should not eat coarsely. And he should not rush to fill his stomach. It's like sometimes you have in some shuls a kiddush after shul, and by the time you get to the table, people are already bending over the food, waiting for the boy priagofen, and as the worker opens it out and the omen's there, the forks are in, and sometimes not even the forks, and the herrings in the mouth and the stomachs are getting filled. Another time it's called lo ye roidei flamalis bitno. Don't run to fill your stomach. There's a kiddush there. Walk slowly. You didn't run to shul this morning. Why are you running to the kiddush so violently? Walk slowly. Take it easy. You'll get there. There'll be no seats left. Fine. You'll sit at the back. Doesn't matter. Like these people who fill themselves with food and drink until their stomachs pop. And when a chacham does eat this little bit which he's supposed to eat, lo yochel b'chanus, he shouldn't stand outside the falafel shop and eat. It's not fair time a chacham eats. Lo b'shuk, and not in the street. Elam if neitzor yagodol, unless it's terribly necessary, he's in the street and he's very thirsty and he's got to have something to drink and there's nowhere to go and sit down. Kedei shelo yisgane b'fnei habriyas. Because it looks ugly. No other reason. It just looks ugly. And why should somebody look at a Talmid Chacham and feel, associate that vision with ugliness? So you're not allowed to do it. V'lo yoichol etzel amei ha'oretz. One doesn't eat with amaratzim. V'lo yaloysan shulchonos hameleim ki tsoya. And not with, one does not eat at tables. And he uses a very harsh phrase to graphically describe the tables. Not at those tables filled with vomit and excrement. That's a table where there's bad conversation. I'm not talking about where the food's not kosher, where the conversation is bad. There's no Torah, there's no refinement. It's bad talk. He doesn't eat at meals where there are a lot of people. And really, you should only eat in public at the Suda's mitzvah. When a chacham drinks wine, he shouldn't drink a lot, just enough to settle his food. When he has relations with his wife, it should also be in a way, in a balanced way. So he goes on with the whole perek. When he speaks, he shouldn't shout like a wild animal and shouldn't raise his voice too much, but he should speak gently. And when he speaks gently, he shouldn't stand far away and speak gently to make people crane to hear him. That's arrogant. Also not right. People should be able to hear you with ease, but you shouldn't be raising your voice. You shouldn't be shouting. Makdim sholom v'chol odom. One should be the first to greet another human being. I've often commented that now that this is becoming a frum part of town, one would hate a situation to arise, which one finds already arising, and it's very disturbing, where two frum people pass each other on the way to shul on a Shabbos morning, and nobody says good Shabbos, or on the way back from shul, nobody says good Shabbos. One has to be makdim sholem v'chol odom. He shouldn't walk too upright and he shouldn't walk too bent over. His clothes should be clean. His business should be conducted correctly. He should have an occupation. And so he goes. All the descriptions which the Ramban brings for a kodosh and a porush. The Rambam in Perek Hey is almost identical to the Ramban on Kedushin Tiyu. And the Rambam starts this period by saying, Kashem Shehachochom Nikar Bechochmoso Yvedeusov, Vuhu Muvdal Bohem Mishar Ha'adon. Just as a Chochom is recognized by his wisdom and knowledge, and with that is separate or distinguished from other people, here we see the Rambam also using the concept of distinctiveness. כך צורך שיהיה ניכר במייסיו, במאכולוי, במשקיו, ובילוסוי, ועשיית צורכוב, ובדיבורוי, ובהילוכוי, ובמלבושוי, ובחילקו דבורוי, ובמסוי, ובמתונו. So in the same way he should be as recognized in the way he eats, in the way he drinks, in his sexual relations, in the way he uses the toilet, in the way he speaks, in the way he walks, in the way he dresses, and in his business dealings. Exactly the same. And this is an absolute eye-opener, because the Rambam learns Kadosh in Tiyu means thou shalt be a Talmid Chacham. And the Rambam learns that there is no such thing as a Chacham who is not a Kodesh. That's the frightening part. That this level of Kadosh in Tiyu is not for an elite somewhere way up. That's for every Talmid Chacham. That's the requirement. I mentioned to you that there are classes of Jews. What are those classes? Down at the bottom you've got the Minim. Minim are Epicurusim. They don't believe. They're atheists. Then after them you get the Mumorim. They do believe, but they don't keep the Torah, they don't keep the mitzvahs. They believe in God, they believe in the Jewish people, but they don't keep the mitzvahs. Two different categories with different halachas. After that you get the Bur. Now we start with the Frum people. The Bur is Frum. Up till there is not Frum. Among the non-Frum people you've got Minim and you've got Mumorim. You've also got a third category which one must be careful to apply, which is a Tinuk Shanishba Ben Akum, an ignorant person, a person who never had the opportunity of knowing. He's not deliberately a Mumor, he was just never educated. So let's say we have three classes of people under the Frum line. You've got the Minim, the Mumorim, and the Tinoku Shanishbu Ben Akum, each one with different halachas. Each class is treated differently. After them you get the Bur. The Bur is Frum, he keeps the mitzvahs, but he's coarse. He's grob. The Bur. After the Bur comes the Amhoritz. He's not grob, he's a mensch. He's ignorant, he doesn't know anything. He keeps, he's Frum, so we're going up a step. He's Frum and he's a mensch, you know, he behaves nicely, but he doesn't know anything. What comes after Amhoritz? I would have said before tonight Talmid Chochem, and after Talmid Chochem a Kodesh. Talmid Chochem is a man now who behaves nicely and is a Talmid Chochem, and after that a Porush, a Kodesh, a holy person. In the Rambam we see not so. There's only one step after Amhoritz. When we're talking about classes of people, we're not talking about different levels within the class. You can go through the Mesillas Yeshorim, and each perek is a different level within a class of people. But we're talking about categories of people. After Am Haoretz comes Talmid Chochem and Kodesh. What happens if one's not a Talmid Chochem, one's an Am Haoretz? What happens if one is a Talmid Chochem but one's not a Kodesh? One knows the Hal of Shas, but one isn't a Kodesh, one isn't a Porush. According to the Rambam, one's also an Am Haoretz. It's also not, that's not called being a Talmid Chochem. We see here the inextricability of Chochmah and one's conduct. Why? We've discussed over Pesach in that same shiur on Paro that knowledge does not affect people. People's conduct and behavior is unaffected by yediyos. No matter how much you know, that's not going to change you. Paro knew that there was only one God, and he knew that God was almighty, and he knew that he was a Rosha, and he knew that the Ribbono Shel Olam was a tzaddik, the Ribbono Shel Olam was right. And he said so. There was nothing missing in Paro's knowledge. There was only missing in Paro's havona. He didn't understand it. He knew it, but he didn't understand it. And so it is possible for a person to have great knowledge and great yediyos, and to be unaffected by that knowledge and those yediyos in the way he behaves. Because he doesn't understand it. He doesn't know what the Ribbono Shel Olam really wants from him. Kedusha, he doesn't understand what Kedusha is. He doesn't understand what's wrong with eating like an animal. It doesn't matter if I'm eating. What I'm eating is kosher? Yes. We said divrei Torah at the table? Yes. We washed and said a bracha before we ate? Yes. We checked the lettuce 10 times before we put it into the salad? Yes. So what's wrong? What's wrong is your grub. It's not nice the way you're eating. It's such a noise. It makes me feel sick. Can't sit at the same table with you. Where does it say? Show me in the halacha where it says that you mustn't make a noise when you eat. You, go to Japan, it's considered very, very polite to make a noise when you're, it shows you're enjoying yourself. Tell you it says you can't do such a thing. Where? Kedushin to you. Take any of the halachas and understand them properly and see what does the Ribbono Shel Olam really want from you. What kind of a mensch is he trying to achieve? What does he want from you? And you'll see that's not the way to eat. Don't eat your falafel in the street. Where does it say you mustn't eat the falafel in the street? Rambam. Rambam says because it looks ugly. That's why. Where does it say thou shalt not look ugly? Is it my fault if I look ugly? Yes, it is your fault if you look ugly. There is such a halacha. But you need havona for such a halacha. You need a bit of understanding for that. I was at a Sheva Brochas once in Yerushalayim, and there was a rov, Talmid Chochem from Johannesburg sitting there. It was his simcha. We all go and wash. We come and sit down. He starts digging in his pocket, pulls out a plastic bag, opens the plastic bag, he's got a roll. Makes some mitzvah on his roll. Why? Probably he was worried about chodosh or something. I don't know why. One doesn't behave like that. Where does it say you don't behave like that? One does that. If one understands, what if you have havona in the halachas, if you have understanding, not just knowledge, you'll know that the Chofetz Chaim didn't walk around with a tent, sit at somebody's table and pull out a roll from his pocket. He didn't do it. That wasn't. If he felt he couldn't eat the rolls, he wouldn't be there. Or if he was there, he wouldn't eat. Or if he felt he could, he would tell the Balabosta, I understand that you don't keep Chodesh, I do. Do you mind? I'll bring some rolls, I'll give them to you before, and put them on my place if you would. So nobody will notice a thing. There are ways to do it, remaining a mensch. It's so easy to keep all the halachas and to be a noval b'rishus ha-Torah, to be a despicable person with the consent of the Torah, with the hechsher of the Torah. So easy, without havona. Says the Rambam, a person whose behavior, whose conduct is not modified by his learning, he's not learning, he's gathering knowledge, that's all. And that's not a Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham needs havona, he needs understanding. And understanding must inevitably alter one's behavior. It has to have that effect. Had Paro understood the miracles, it would have altered his behavior, he wouldn't have come running after them. Had Bnei Israel understood their miracles properly, they wouldn't have served the golden calf. When you've understood something, it must affect your behavior. Knowledge doesn't affect the behavior at all. Once you've understood a problem, you see it differently. Find a person, sees pictures on the television of what's going on in South Africa and cancels his holiday, not going to South Africa. He sees pictures about what's going on in Chernobyl and he's not going to Europe. Where is he going? Eventually I have nowhere to go. But if he would analyze and he would study a little bit and read up what's going on, what does it mean, what is the radiation, how has it affected people, what areas has it affected them, how does one take precautions not to be affected by it, a little bit of havona. And you know how to react, you know how to behave. What is going on in South Africa? You analyze the situation, there are safe areas, there are not safe areas. You don't cancel your trip necessarily. But for that you need havona. The person who is reacting to knowledge rather than to understanding has to react in a superficial and therefore incorrect way. Says the Rambam, any individual who acts without kedusha is not a Talmid Chacham. Because the definition, it's in fact not a definition, if you look at the words in the Rambam, it's a symptom. It's a way of recognizing. The definition of a Talmid Chacham is not his behavior. The definition of a Talmid Chacham is his learning. But k'shem she'achacham nikar b'chachmosoi, just as a Chacham can be identified by his wisdom, kach tzorich she'yeh nikar b'maisav, so he must be identified by his actions. It's a way of identification. It's not a definition. You're a Talmid Chacham if you know Shas and understand it. You're a Talmid Chacham. But if you're not identifiable by your behavior, that's a sign that you're not a Talmid Chacham. He knows Shas. He obviously doesn't. He knows it, but he doesn't understand it. For if he understood it, he would be a Kodosh. Nobody can learn Torah with understanding and not act with Kedusha and with sanctity. Yes, the Torah gives us an instruction at the beginning of this Sedra, Kedusha to you. An instruction with enormous potential and consequence, the result of which is dveikus to the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. Through this one can actually cleave to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But how does one get there? What does it mean? Not as difficult as it sounds. not as difficult as it sounds. It's the direction that every Jew is meant to be on. When he's no longer a bur, it's a bit of refinement, and he's no longer an amhoris, he starts learning Torah, and he learns Torah with havona. I want to understand, it's not enough for me to learn a parasha of Chumash and to say I now know this Chumash and I can tell you over what Rashi says, and I can tell you over what Ramban says, and I can tell you over what the Sipurnu says, and I can tell you all the Midrashim on it because I read my art scrolls. That's Yediyah. So you know, clever, so very, very nice. You know, my computer also knows, I put it into my computer this afternoon, so you and the computer just the same, no difference. I want to know from you, according to the Ramban, why did the Ribbono Shel include this piece of Torah? What did he want from us? Explain that to me. According to Rashi, why did the Ribbono Shel include this piece of Torah? And now explain to me the difference between the Ramban and Rashi. And tell me a piece sugi of Gemara, this is what Rashi says, this is what Tosfos says, this is what the Rif says, this is what the Ramban paskens. I want to have Havona, I want to understand. Why is that the Halacha? Why does the Ribbono Shel want things to work in this particular way? That's the Havona, that's the understanding that has to go hand in hand in one's learning. And if one learns that way, and if one analyzes that way, and if one thinks that way, one must be affected. And little by little one will introduce precious. The 6-course meal will become a 5-course meal. The courses will become a little smaller. The exercise becomes a little bit bigger. Weight goes down, wisdom goes up. And one finds all of a sudden that one is healthier, and one is more attuned, one is more sensitive. Just all of a sudden, by changed habits it's happening, no major events. Automatically, the important part of the meal is that the food should be wholesome and good tasting, and that the company should be good, and that the brochas said should be good, and the divrei Torah should be good. That's the important thing. The quantity ceases to be that important. The way one entertains oneself starts to change. One finds one is no longer entertained by superficial things. One enjoys a deeper form of entertainment. One enjoys deeper emotions and a little bit more chokhmah in the entertainment. All of a sudden one looks at the things one used to laugh at and the things one laughs at today. A young man said to me recently, he said, you know, my children made me look at a movie that they had taken from a video shop, and they were sure I would enjoy it, and I couldn't stand it. It was so stupid, it was so ridiculous. He said, but you know what, 5 years ago I would have loved it. That's what's happened. All of a sudden my level of entertainment has changed. Not that he doesn't look at movies, but he looks at a different type of movie. Well, how did it happen? What caused it? It's automatic. Those things happen so slowly, so gently, that you don't even notice it happening. All of a sudden, the kind of company you used to keep and feel comfortable with, you no longer feel that comfortable with. The chatter is idle and meaningless, and the feeling it leaves behind is one of vacuum. You enjoy a different kind of company all of a sudden. Things start changing. The meals you enjoy change, the company, the entertainment, the kind of Torah. You listen to a shiur and you say, no, once upon a time such a shiur would have satisfied me. It doesn't satisfy me anymore. I need more than that. I need more depth than that. One reads a newspaper article and one says, you know, a couple of years ago I would have taken that. I would have accepted it. Today I look at it. It's not well thought out. It's not well constructed. There are flaws in the reasoning. One grows, one develops, one changes. And all of a sudden one finds one is being less affected by dramatic impact, and more affected by havana, by understanding, by depth, by feeling. And so little by little one's neshama gets more nourishment and the wild beast gets less nourishment, to the point where it's the neshama, it's the soul and the intellect which starts directing our lives and starts determining our direction.